We're going to skip the sermon. We're just going to play Family Feud today. Just kidding. Let's see here. So, Family Feud. The Richard Dawson version or the, who's the new guy? Steve Harvey, I think, something like that, yeah. Was this anybody's favorite game show? Anybody's? No, it wasn't mine either, but I watched it. So, so the question today, I surveyed one person, not 100. The survey was of one person. I asked him in the mirror this morning, the more I have, the more I blank. So there's 8 top answers. Want is one of them. Thank you. And I'll give you a little clue here. There's 4 that are kind of on the negative side and 4 that are kind of on the positive side. So help me out here. The more I have, the more I give. The more I need. The more I have to clean. Yes, that is very true. The more I can love. Okay, good. The more I thank God. Good. The more I share. How else would you answer this one? The more I get, or the more I have, the more I use. Good. Put in the attic. Stick in the attic. Yes. And our attic is full.
Pray.
The more I pray. Good. The more I pay in taxes. That's a good one as well. The more I give thanks. The more I worry. Yes. The more I gain. Okay. Well, those are all great answers. Here's the answers that I came up with. Worry, right? Want, somebody said that. The more I waste. Nobody said that, maybe because we're all too ashamed to say it. But the more I have, the more I waste. And in reality, the more I have, the more I trust in myself. Those are all kind of on the negative side of things. And on the positive side of things, you guys did say it, the more good I'm able to do, the more I give away, the more I give thanks, and ultimately, hopefully, the more I have, the more I trust God, which often is not the case. But I think that was partially what God's intent was, because he gives us all things for our enjoyment, that we may know him better. And so with that in mind, if you have a Bible, I'd encourage you to turn to Genesis chapter 30. And I was just trying to think, when Tom and Marlene were headed to Texas, we might have been in about chapter, the late teens maybe. So we've made a little progress since they've gone and returned. But we're going to be in Genesis chapter 30 this morning. We're going to be, it's going to be chapter, or verse 25. We'll read through the end of this chapter as well as a bit into chapter 31. And so if you were here last week, you might recall that we read about the birthing derby, right? The birthing contest that Jacob and his 4 women that he, that bore his children. We read about that. We read about the fact that Leah and Rachel both wanted more. Rachel in particular said, "Give me children or I will die." And we came to the realization that really wasn't children that she wanted. She wanted just the accomplishment. She's looking for fulfillment. Leah was looking for love and wasn't able to find it. And yet through all of it, the Bible points to the fact that the more that you're looking for is actually, he has a name. His name is Jesus. And you can find everything you were looking for in him. And so that's what we looked at last week. The story of Jacob continues to weave through these chapters. And last week we read about the increase of Jacob's family. And this week we're going to read about the increase of Jacob's flocks, which is this really interesting story. It's a little confusing, so you might need to read it several times, more than just here in the sermon time. But I saw something in here that I had never seen before. Of course, my wife, when I asked her about it, she said, "Oh yeah, I've known about that." But again, it was one of those moments where it just jumped off the page of me. I never saw it before. So Let's see here. And this chapter in particular, this chapter, what we're going to read today, it really could really be labeled a family feud. And so it is very appropriate that that's what we started with this morning. So the first bit of a section here, I'm just going to label it Jacob's request. And before I read that, let me pray. Lord, I come before you, and I don't pray just because it's ritual, but because we need you. These words are life, and we need them applied to our own. So Holy Spirit, will you please illuminate your word this morning? Help us to see what's here, understand it, connect the dots of how it applies 4,000 years later or whatever we're at in the calendar. Because you're the same yesterday, today, and forever. Your truth does not change. And so I pray that your truth would be evident, it would be spotlighted this morning. Please move among us as your people. I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. So let's read Genesis 30, 25 through 34. After Rachel gave birth to Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me on my way so I can go back to my own homeland. Give me my wives and children for whom I have served you, and I will be on my way. You know how much work I've done for you." But Laban said to him, "If I have found favor in your eyes, please stay. I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you." He added, "Name your wages, and I will pay them." Jacob said to him, "You know how I have worked for you and how your livestock has fared under my care. The little you had before I came has increased greatly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I have been. But now, when may I do something for my own household?" "What shall I give you?" he asked. "Don't give me anything," Jacob replied, "but if you will do this one thing for me, I will go on tending your flocks and watching over them. Let me go through all your flocks today and remove from them every speckled or spotted sheep, every dark-colored lamb, and every spotted or speckled goat. They will be my wages. And my honesty will testify for me in the future, whenever you check on the wages you have paid me. Any goat in my possession that is not speckled or spotted, or any lamb that is not dark colored, will be considered stolen." "Agreed," said Laban. "Let it be as you have said." So let's stop there for just a moment and just get the picture of what's going on here. So what's Jacob's request? He wants to go home. He has his wife and his kids. He realizes he doesn't have much else beyond that, but he wants to go back home to Canaan, back to be with his family, his household, Isaac and Rebekah. But Laban doesn't want him to go. And why doesn't he want him to go? Because Laban realizes, I've really increased in value. My net worth has really increased since Jacob has been here. The Lord, apparently, I found out through divination that the Lord is blessing me because of Jacob's presence here in our clan and on our land. So Laban doesn't want him to go. But Jacob makes a second request here. Not only can I go, but don't pay me anything. Just let me have any of the sheep or goats that are not white. Is basically, I think, what it comes down to. If they have spots or speckles or stripes or they're dark colored, those will be my wages. You have all the white sheep and the goats. And so in my possession, if I have any that are just plain white, you'll know I stole them because those aren't the ones I want. I want just these particular ones. And Laban agrees. But if we know anything about Laban, he's pretty sneaky. Remember, he was the one who deceived his nephew, right? Jacob deceived him into marrying the firstborn Leah. There's other kind of hints throughout the scriptures here of Laban's trickery, his deceit. And what we're going to read next is the part that I never saw before. And boy, is he's not a good character, this Laban. Let's read it because it comes out as Laban's scheme. So remember, Jacob says, "Let me just have these speckled, spotted, dark goats and sheep." And Laban agrees. Verse 35, it says, that same day he removed, and the he there is not Jacob, it's Laban. I always thought it was Jacob, but it's not, it's Laban. That same day, Laban, he removed all the male goats that were streaked or spotted, and all the speckled or spotted female goats, and all that had white on them, and all the dark-colored lambs, and he placed them in the care of his sons, Laban's sons. And then he put a three-day journey between himself and Jacob, while Jacob continued to tend the rest of Laban's flocks. So in essence, what happened here is, if I had a bowl of M&Ms up here, and I asked Matt, I said, or if Matt asked if he could have some of these M&Ms, and I say, sure, you can have all the green ones, but I've taken all the green ones out. Matt looks in the bowl, and I've told him he could have an M&Ms, but there's no green ones in here. So there he is. I'm being generous, right? But he's not going to get anything. And that's what Laban's done. He's taken away all the speckled, spotted, streaked, dark-colored lambs, because when they mate together, that's what they're going to produce. All that's left for Jacob to work with is white lambs and goats. How is Jacob ever going to have a flock of his own? Because Laban has taken all the green M&Ms and separated them. He's taken all of those. So, of course, Laban is going to agree to this deal because he knows he's going to make out on the deal. Jacob's going to be standing there with nothing left to do. But Jacob has a plan. So I'm calling this Jacob's counter, and it starts in verse 37. This is where it gets a little confusing, and so just hang tight with me. Jacob, it says this way, Jacob, however, took fresh-cut branches from poplar, almond, and plane trees and made white strips on them by peeling the bark and exposing the white inner wood of the branches. Then he placed the peeled branches in all of the watering troughs so that they would be directly in front of the flocks when they came to drink. When the flocks were in heat and came to drink, they mated in front of the branches, and they bore young that were streaked or speckled or spotted. Jacob set apart the young of the flock by themselves, but made the rest face the streaked and dark-colored animals that belonged to Laban. Thus he made separate flocks for himself and did not put them with Laban's animals. Whenever the stronger females were in heat, Jacob would place the branches and the troughs in front of the animals so they would mate near the branches. But if the animals were weak, he would not place them there. So the weak animals went to Laban and the strong ones to Jacob. In this way, the man grew prosperous and came to own large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. So there was it's kind of strange, right? They had this idea, there was this superstition, so to speak, that when the animals were in heat and they mated, whatever they saw in front of them would somehow be imprinted then on that embryo. And so these two white animals, right, that would mate together, you would think, well, they're going to create another white animal. Jacob doesn't white wine animals. He doesn't want those. He wants dark ones or spotted or streaked or striped. So he sets these branches of these trees in front of the area where they're mating, and wouldn't you know it, two white animals produce a dark animal or a speckled or striped or streaked. Jacob may have thought that his scientific approach to this was actually doing it. Later on, we're going to read that who was ultimately responsible for this miracle, so to speak. Well, it was God. And so the trick that Laban had set out, the trap for this mating, actually backfired on him, and Jacob ends up with the strongest animals, and he grew exceedingly prosperous. We'll find out a little bit later on in chapter 31 that this process of this mating, the growing of these flocks, this was over a six-year span. And so while we read from 37 to the end of the chapter, it seems like it's just happening quickly. It's a process of years. And so Jacob serves 14 years for the wives and 6 years for the flocks. Happens over a period of time. Well, on to chapter 31, and we're going to read about God's command to Jacob, because God has not forgotten about him. Chapter 31 starts this way. Jacob heard that Laban's sons were saying, "Jacob has taken everything our father owned and has gained all this wealth from what belonged to our father." And Jacob noticed that Laban's attitude toward him was not what it had been. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Go back to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you." So Jacob sent word to Rachel and Leah to come out to the fields where his flocks were. He said to them, "I see that your father's attitude toward me has not been what it was before, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I've worked for your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. However, God has not allowed him to harm me. If he said, 'The speckled ones will be your wages,' then all the flocks gave birth to speckled young. And if he said, 'The streaked ones will be your wages,' then the flocks bore streaked young. So God has taken away your father's livestock and has given them to me. In breeding season, I once had a dream in which I looked up and saw that the male goat mating with the flock were streaked, spotted, or speckled or spotted. The angel of God said to me in the dream, 'Jacob,' I answered, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Look up and see that all the male goats mating with the flock are streaked, speckled, or spotted, for I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now leave this land and go back to your native land.'" I'll stop there. Sorry, my tongue was a little tied there. All this animal mating talk is not really on the tip of my tongue most of the time. But we see in these passages that God has not forgotten Jacob. And God is commanding him now to go back to the place where he was once a fugitive, from where he ran. But the good news is that God is going to be with him, because he's the God of Bethel. And what happened at Bethel? That's where he had the dream of the staircase that connected heaven and earth, where we saw Jesus. Jacob anointed that stone that he was sleeping on with oil, set it up as a pillar, as a reminder that God was there. And so this same God speaks to him and says, "Okay, it's time to go. It's time to return." Will Jacob respond? Will he obey? Well, yes, he will. The last section that I'd like to read for today, I've just labeled it Rachel's Heist. Verse 14 of chapter 31. Then Rachel and Leah replied, "Do we still have any share in the inheritance of our father's estate? Does he not regard us as foreigners? Not only has he sold us, but he has used up what was paid for us. Surely all the wealth that God took away from our father belongs to us and our children. So do whatever God has told you." Then Jacob put his children and his wives on camels, and he drove all his livestock ahead of him, along with the goods he had accumulated in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. When Laban had gone to shear his sheep, Rachel stole her father's household gods. Moreover, Jacob deceived Laban the Aramean by not telling him he was running away. So he fled with all he had, crossed the Euphrates River, and headed for the hill country of Gilead. So Jacob he's returning, but he's not doing it. He's not making an announcement and then leaving. What's he doing? He's doing it in secret. When Laban is off shearing the sheep, Jacob and his family are going to escape to go head back. So they came to Paddan Aram as fugitives, and now they're leaving as fugitives, on the run because of another family feud. And in the midst of all this, Rachel decides that it would be wise in her eyes to steal her father's household idols. This is probably not an issue of her wanting to worship those. It's probably some level of retaliation on her part. Because up there in verse 14, Rachel and Leah are complaining that there may not be any inheritance left for them because their father has wasted it all in some regard. And so they're upset. And so maybe Rachel is taking the household gods as retaliation against her father. Those gods are going to come back into play a little bit later in the chapter, which we'll read next week. So this increase in Jacob's flocks and the increase in wealth then causes this friction, greater friction between the family, between Laban and Jacob and those that are involved, and so they steal away and head back home. Another interesting component in the life and the story of Jacob. And underneath all of this, there's this idea that wealth was really one of the factors. And so I'd like to spend a little time talking about that this morning. And initially, the idea that wealth creates blindness. How did wealth create blindness in this particular story? Really, where it comes out is in the life of Laban. And if you look back in the chapter 30, Laban can see that he has increased in his wealth since Jacob has been there. But how has it made him blind? It's made him blind in the sense that he doesn't want what's best for his nephew, now son-in-law, and his daughters. What does he want? He wants what's best for him. And what's best for Laban is for Jacob to stay, because the longer Jacob stays, the wealthier I'll become. Laban has become blind, seduced by the success. This wealth may have played some sort of factor in his faith as well. We don't really know if he believed in the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob. He makes comment about through divination. He learned that the Lord has blessed him. Person doesn't need to use divination to see God's hand at play. Divination is work of the evil one. Wealth creates blindness. And as you look and throughout the scriptures warn over and over and over about the dangers of wealth. How has wealth created blindness in your life? What are some of the factors or ways that it has impacted the way that you see things? Wealth creates greed. The more I have, the more I want. Because I don't have enough, I need more. You've heard this story before. One of the wealthiest men on the planet at the time, John Rockefeller, he was asked, how much money is enough? And he says, $1 more. $1 more. Blinded to the billions of dollars that he already had. He didn't have enough. He needed $1 more. The same is true for us. Even though none of us in this room are billionaires that I'm aware of. If you are, talk to me after the service. No, just kidding. It creates a greed. Wealth creates envy. Because what I have isn't good enough. I want what someone else has. It creates a jealousy. Wealth creates a pride and an arrogance. It makes us blind to what we have and our position in life, and it causes us to compare ourselves to others. Is my net worth more than yours? Who's at the top of the totem pole and who's at the bottom? Where do I fit in there? Am I near the top or near the bottom? Wealth creates all these questions that God never intended us for us to ask. The enemy's scheme is to compare and to not be satisfied, to not be content with what you have. That's the enemy's scheme. The enemy's scheme is to give you wealth so that you'll become blind to yourself and to what God has for you. What other ways does wealth create blindness? Causes us to waste things. If I have $40 in my wallet, I'm much, much more apt to give away $10 and blow it on coffee or dessert or something than if I only have $10 in my wallet. The more I have, the more I'm willing to spend frivolously. The more I have, the more I worry. the more I have to clean, the more I have to put in the attic, the more I have to protect, the more I have to make sure nobody's going to get my stuff. It creates a blindness. We don't have to worry about this stuff. It causes us to see things that aren't really there. It affects the way we see life. However, wealth can also be a blessing. And we see that in this passage as well, that wealth creates blessing. What's the blessing that this wealth that God gave Jacob created? Well, part of the blessing is that he now had food and clothes and servants and camels. He had transportation, right, to be able to ride back to Canaan on. They didn't have to walk. They had things for their family. They now had the ability to be able to trade things. They had some level of power to be able to sustain their clan, their family that they had created. They did have enough money to move away, yes. So they had the ability to be able to do that. And as we read the rest of the story in the weeks to come, you'll see where this wealth that Jacob had accumulated, how it is a blessing, how it can be used for good. He'll use some of that wealth to reconcile his relationship with Esau, who still wants probably to kill him, but Jacob sends a peace offering, so to speak, and that's coming up in the chapters ahead. Wealth can be a blessing. And certainly in your own life, where have you seen the more I have, the more I can give away? Certainly, I know many of your stories of times of generosity where you have felt the Lord's prompting and you've taken out of your own to give to someone else. Instances where you have shared the good gifts that God has given to you. The more I have, the more I can share. The more I have, the more I can give away. The more I have, the more I can do good. It's hard to give somebody a ride if you don't have a car. And in reality, we can talk about who's wealthy in this room and who's not, but if you're an American and you have a car and you have a place to sleep, you're wealthy. We just go down to the rescue mission and ask some of the men and women down there and ask them who in this room is wealthy, and they're going to say every single one of you is wealthy. Certainly there's different degrees, but let's not compare. Let's just be thankful for what God has given to us. And that's another thing. The more I have, the more I can be thankful for what God has given to me. I didn't create this wealth myself. God has given it to me. And the scriptures point to this over and over and over as a reminder that the wealth you have did not come from your own genius. It came from the genius of God, from his grace to you. And therefore, the more I have, the more I can trust God. Because what I have isn't mine anyway. It's all his. And if by chance, that's not the right word. If by the Lord's will, he gives me more. That's not because I've been so good. It's because he wants me to give it away and share it and trust him more. In Jacob and Laban's situation, the wealth caused division. They were jealous of one another. I want what you have. It caused entitlement and secrecy and disunity. And that was never God's intent. The wealth that he gives us is to promote unity so that we might love one another. It was never to be a symbol of status or position. So as we read through the scriptures, there's many, many, many phrases or words that Jesus said about this. Jesus said, what good is it? And Beth referred to it earlier. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world and yet forfeit his soul? You can have everything, but if you forfeit your soul, you lose it all. Jesus said, no one can serve two masters. You cannot serve both God and money. Jesus said, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist of an abundance of possessions. Jesus said, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God. Jesus said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God." And he said, "But woe to you who are rich, for you have already received your comfort." And it was Jesus who said, it's more blessed to give than to receive. God gives you this stuff not so that you can hoard it, but so that you can give it away. Paul, when he was writing to Timothy, when he was mentoring Timothy, he goes into this in chapter 6 of 1 Timothy. And so if you have a Bible, I'd encourage you to turn over there. So from one end of the Bible over to the other. And there's this section here that I'd like us to meditate on for a moment before we close. It's 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19. He's writing this to the church, and he says this, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. So again, he's talking to believers. God is the one who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment, for our satisfaction. Verse 18 says, command them. Who is the them? The believers who are rich. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. So there's comparison between a life that comes from being rich in the things of this world and being a life that comes from being rich in the things of God. And we've said many times, Jesus is our treasure. If you have Christ, you have everything. Wealth comes from God, and it's His intent that we would use it to bless others. That we would enjoy some for ourselves, that we would share some with others, and that we would give some of it away. It's an argument of temporal pleasure versus eternal pleasure. And so the wealth that God has given you, and again, in a variety of different ways, your wealth works for you either as a blinder or as binoculars. Wealth can blind you so that you only care about yourself. You build up your bulwark around your home, right? Around your life, your defense, with this wealth that God has given you, so that you don't have to pay attention or care about anything else. Just yourself. And the wealth that God gave you blinds you. Or you can use the wealth that God has given you as binoculars to be able to peer into the lives of others who are hurting, who are desperate, who need the blessing of God. He has given it to you. You can see it and do something about it. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. This is convicting as American believers, because we have an attic full of junk that we thought was so important. So, may we learn from the lessons of Laban and Jacob and his family and what God has intended for us, because we have been blessed at Alliance Community Church. And there are those who are in our midst who need us to put our binoculars on and see them and help. And it's all for God's glory. The risk is that he gives you the wealth and it brings glory to yourself. Even in your generosity, you want to pat yourself on the back and say, I did good there, didn't I? May the glory be to God alone. For he has done awesome things time and time again.